right, so we've got the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Brian Haney, here in Las Vegas at Big 12 Media Days. Brian, welcome in, and we appreciate having you on.
Hey, thanks, Joe. Thanks, Colby. Great to be on with you both, and excitement in the air, no doubt. We come to these things every year, and some years we have to kind of work up that excitement a little bit more. Uh-huh. This year, it's palpable. You can reach out and taste it. People are talking Hawks.
Right.
They're talking Kansas and Lance Leipold. There's realistic expectation that they could compete to play in the Big 12 title game. And we're not used to that, obviously. So we're embracing it. We're enjoying it. And we're realizing that there's a lot of work between what's said in July and what actually gets hashed out on these
right.
types of fields here over the course of November or December. But it's a team that has all the fixings. When you talk about experience and experience together within the same system, when you talk about senior leadership, great head coach, one of the top 10 coaches in America, it's all kind of coming together. Now let's see if it can come to fruition in the way we're all dreaming.
Yeah, and when you took over for Bob Davis, obviously Kansas football was, you know, kind of a doormat, if we're just being honest. And so yeah. Now that expectation, how do you see the program? Because when Lance came in, there wasn't much expectation. Now they're maintaining some of the progress that they've built. So how have you seen that shift take place in the Kansas football program?
You know, I've called some one-win seasons, some two-win seasons, and some no-win seasons. And in those years, you knew after a certain point on the schedule, it was probably going to be tough to win a game. Mm-hmm. And so from a broadcaster's perspective, how do we still make it compelling and interesting and entertaining if we're getting beat by multiple scores? The difference under Lance Leipold ever since the final month of his first year, when we mm-hmm. beat Texas but then nearly won at TCU, nearly beat West Virginia, every game since, you show up on a Saturday and you feel like you have a genuine, realistic chance to win. And I can't tell you what a frame of mindset differential that is.
Oh, yeah.
Between, okay, how do we put lipstick on a bad situation here in a losing season versus, my goodness, we may only go 6-6, but in all 12 games, we have a chance.
Oh, yeah.
In this particular season, we're talking about a chance to go 9-3, 10-2, and certainly have a chance in all 12 games, but suddenly have a chance to be favored in more games than not. That's
right.
Such a different mindset. So you're right. It was tough my first year, but you know, we tried to tell good stories and talk about the guys that were working hard to pave the way and lay the groundwork and all that. But now you don't have to go far to find great stories on this team, because you've got a ton of hardworking kids that have been in the system for 4 and 5 seasons, that believe in the culture that Lance and his staff, including Matt Gildersleeve, have built. That's why we were able to keep Kobe Bryant when others came calling. That's
right.
Why Jalen Daniels wanted to stay and not chase, you know, an opportunity elsewhere. Kansas certainly has a strong NIL department. They have a tremendous culture. They've got a great head coach that folks want to play for. You add it all up, and I guess we shouldn't be surprised that they've been able to keep the roster as intact as they have. But I would have told you, and we saw it in the Les Miles era, that the odds were against us keeping anything shiny, fancy, and new. Mm-hmm. We saw some great defensive linemen get pilfered away by SEC schools 1 year after Les Miles had brought them to Kansas.
Right.
We couldn't compete. Now, surprisingly, just 3 years later, we're not only recruiting and developing great talent, but they're staying here because they sense something truly special is brewing in Lawrence and they want to be a part of it. And I'm not sure I could have wrapped my mind around that 3 or 4 seasons ago when we were struggling to win games and we were losing the best of what we had in the same way that Kansas basketball can pretty much pick and choose what they want. SEC schools was doing that to us, and to see Kansas now have the continuity of the roster while making key additions in spots that needed them, and we can talk about that later, that to me is what's most exciting, because you add all that up, and it, to me, the word that screams loud and clear here is sustainability.
Yeah.
KU football, only twice in our history has been the back-to-back bowl games. We've had great individual seasons, but sustainability and repeatability has been really difficult to chase. Now you've got a coach who's pledged his loyalty to the university in back-to-back off seasons when he could have gone elsewhere.
Right.
You've got an AD that's equipped that coach with a new contract for him and his assistants, a new stadium on the way, a near $500 million project. So much great positive buzz. And for the first time and maybe ever, it feels sustainable, and that's the difference, I think.
Yeah, I go back to the game. It was 2020 at Oklahoma in Norman, and Jalen Daniels, he took a beating that game. I mean, just took hit after hit, and yeah. Now he's in a situation where you know, people are saying, oh, if he's healthy, then the Jayhawks are just in contention for the Big 12 title. Just, you know, I just think that it's an incredible transition that they've made.
Really is. And obviously that's the million-dollar question. Can Jalen Daniels play all 12 games? He averages 6 games played a season over his previous 4 years. And I remember his rookie year when he was thrown into the fire and he was, you know, barely 17, 18 years old and the O-line wasn't protecting him and he took some lumps. And then he's had a couple of freak injuries since that no matter how much preparation he put into his body heading into the year, he just had some tough luck. This year, I just got done talking to him a little bit ago, he's gone coast to coast working with different trainers and specialists to put himself in the best possible position to play all 12, all 13 or 14 or maybe more games within this year. And he told ESPN yesterday, and you should check out the article that Adam Rittenberger wrote. It was a tremendous piece that he did, talking to Jalen, talking to his coaches, his strength coach, all that. And Jalen had the quote, he said, it's not just my goal, it's my prayer. When I pray to God, I pray, can I play every game? I don't ask him to give me my best possible abilities or best possible results. I just want to play. Because for these guys, so much of their identity is wrapped up in who they are as a football player and what do they bring on a week-in, week-out basis. And to have that taken from him from the bulk of last season, I know it was really tough emotionally and mentally. But I think it's made him a stronger person. I think he had to do some self-analysis on what can I do to be more available next year. But he also studied the game too, which you're forced to do when you can't physically play it. And so I think he comes out of it between the years as good as he's ever been in terms of knowledge of the game, a handling of what he is and what he needs to continue to work on, but also a determination that I think could lead to something really special this year. So really good stuff out of Jalen today. It's going to be a special season. And if it's truly going to be the dream season that we all hope it can be, he's the biggest key, obviously. You knew that before you flew out here to Vegas. That's not breaking news. But I think it's refreshing to hear him speak with some humility, some determination in his voice, him speaking, deflecting praise and putting it on his teammates and talking about how, you know, it's fun to be last year's media darling as the preseason offensive player of the year, but it's way more fun to come in this year and they're not talking about him. They're talking about the team.
Right.
5 first place votes as a team. They're talking about multiple all Big 12, all American candidates on the total team. And I think he much rather see it that way and hear it that way. And that's largely been what today's narrative has sounded like. And that's obviously a breath of fresh air for the head coach too.
Yeah, we were talking with Devin Neal earlier and, you know, I asked him about his decision to come back. And I remember at the bowl game press conference when they first announced that it was the guaranteed rate bowl, you asked him, is becoming KU's all-time leading rusher a factor?
Yeah.
And he didn't mention that at first. I had to pry it out of him after he answered the original question because every answer that he gave was all team-oriented.
Yep.
And I think that just says a lot for where they're at.
It does. And he knew the biggest part of his legacy, Devin Neal, in you know, leaving Lawrence as the guy that committed to this program when we were down and out, and he was the number one ranked player in the state. And a lot of people probably looked at him funny and said, really? You sure? He committed to his hometown team because he thought he could do something special to turn the course and change the narrative. To fast forward 4 years and think about a team that's competing for a Big 12 championship, a team that if you get that could play in the college football playoff, he knows his greatest legacy is cemented in those team achievements. Having said that, he knows the exact number.
Oh, yeah.
He speaks with expectancy that he's going to have a good season and a healthy season, and he's going to get all 764 yards that he's back. Yep. He knows that there's some total touchdown marks and rushing TD marks that he is 8 and 7 respectively back from. He knows all the categories.
Right.
And that doesn't make him selfish or individual goal-minded. You can be a total team guy, but certainly have personal goals. And so it's good to hear him, you know, pound the chest and beat the drum for the team objectives while absolutely understanding what's at stake for him personally. And he told me a second ago in an interview we did for social media, that next to winning a Big 12 title is the biggest reason why he came back. He wants June Henley's record.
Right.
And Lord willing and good health willing, that's something he could get by week 7 or 8.
Right.
And then really put a stamp on it and rush past it by 500 or 600 yards by the end of the year.
Yeah, and I want to move over to the defensive side of the ball. You got Melo Dotson. You've got the Hawk Mamba, the nickname you gave him, I'm pretty sure. It's Kobe Bryant. And so you got 2 preseason first-team All-Big 12 corners. Just how does that help out a defense, especially on a front 7 that is going to have to be mixing and matching some guys early in the season?
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, who else has a pair of cover corners like that in the Big 12? It's one of the best corner tandems in the country, let alone the conference, and he's special. And yes, I'm proud of the Hawk Mamba mantra, because you love it when you give a kid a nickname and he embraces it.
Right.
And the ultimate form of embracing a nickname is he went out and bought a $3,000 gold snake pendant that says Hawk Mamba.
Right.
I think it's either diamond encrusted or cubic zirconium. I'm not sure which it is, but he told me how much he paid for it, and he flipped it over, and I could read Hawk Mamba on the back. And so he's embracing that mindset. I thought, okay, Grim Reaper has his T-shirts, and people put hashtags Real Deal Devin Neal, but Kobe Bryant got a $3,000 pendant. He really likes this nickname. I did find out today, though, that Lance doesn't like it as much.
Oh, really?
So I don't know. Maybe we got to come up with a good nickname for Lance, and then we'll be back in the nickname races. But to your point, you know, when we're curious to see what the pass rush is going to look like without Austin Booker, and I think we've got some great replacements that collectively, you know, can be dynamic up front, but we don't know for sure until the rubber meets the road in September. And Booker was, you know, transcendent breakthrough, all Big 12 newcomer type player as a pass rusher that's now with the Chicago Bears. Boy, is it great to have some guys that can stay with the receivers downfield to give you an extra Mississippi or two
right.
in order to get to the passer. It's amazing how complementary those two aspects of the game are. If you don't have anybody that can cover in the back end, well, then you better get to that quarterback mm-hmm. before they can say rock chalk or you're in trouble. But when you got guys that allow your defensive front a split second longer to get there because their coverage is so good, I think that'll allow some of these new pieces that we're leaning on so much to settle in, get acclimated, and then really start to break through like you saw Booker start to do in late September of a year ago.
Right, and then the safeties, they got to replace Kenny Logan, who was about as Kansas Jayhawks as you can get. I mean, he really embodied the brand. And so you got O.J. Burroughs and Marvin Grant back there. You know, just a solid secondary all around, and you got D.K. McDonald, who coached Darius Slay and other Philadelphia Eagles. So a lot of experience coming back into that DB room.
I'm so glad you brought up Coach McDonald, because what's the goal of every kid you've talked to today and yesterday?
Right.
Play
NFL.
On Sundays, right? Mm-hmm. We're doing this interview at the home of the Raiders. Last year we were at the home of the Cowboys. They all watch every NFL game on Sundays. That's the dream. And so when you've got two legitimate bona fide NFL prospects at each corner position, and OJ is probably a little undersized, but really good college player
right.
who might get a tryout someday, somewhere, don't you think they're fired up to learn from Coach McDonald and have that resume, you know, those types of names on the wall that he's worked with? And so you could argue that position group is probably our position group with the best pro prospects collectively, maybe running back and cornerback, right?
Yeah.
In terms of number of guys, quality and quantity. And so to bring in a guy that has great college experience, but also has worked at the NFL level with some big time dudes, I promise you, Kobe, Mello, and the whole like were super stoked when that was the addition there. So thanks for bringing that up. And, you know, we're not going to run through all the new coaches, but it was different this year to have some changes at O-line and OC. Mm-hmm. And last year, of course, you probably know this, but last year when we didn't lose a single assistant, it was the first time in 20 seasons of KU football that you had total coaching continuity at every position. That's
right.
Wild that it hadn't happened in 20 years. Are you even 20 years old, Joe?
You're probably, I'm 22,
I'm kidding.
But barely.
The point is, almost your entire life.
Yeah.
So it's only natural that you're going to lose a Kotelnicki
right.
or Coach Fuchs, who got a job coaching the Titans
right.
O-line. I mean, when you're losing guys to Penn State and the NFL, you know you had a good season.
Yeah.
So now we start to say, okay, is Lance Leipold's ability to identify coaching talent as good the second time around, when in some of these cases it's guys he's worked with before that are coming back, in other cases it's a new marriage, but I think you have to trust him, because we didn't know a lot about his staff that he came in with 3 years
True.
ago, and look how well they turned out. So I think that's a storyline that not enough people are talking about. How's it going to look with Jeff Grimes at OC, all that? That's been mentioned today, but some of the other changes we had, I think we'll tell the tale on just how good this team can be, how high the ceiling is, if those are seamless transitions to a coaching staff that didn't have to make any changes
right.
one off season ago.
Yeah, and I think it'll be really interesting, because in Jeff Grimes' first press conference with us in the spring, he was saying, yeah, we are open to going under center, something that happened one time when Dominic Pooney moved to center and they did a quarterback sneak with Cole Ballard in the Texas Tech game. Just a different look, and can really diversify this offense.
I think he's going to add some wrinkles that make this running game in particular really formidable while also not reinventing the wheel. I mean, you're inheriting an offense that averages 37 a game. You're inheriting an offense that has multiple projected NFL players and school record holders. Don't come in and flip the table over and try to change too much, but add some nuances here and there to make you more dynamic. He knows that. He gets that. And he's been delightful to work with. And I think his confidence in what he brings, but also a humility that, hey, this thing's rocking and rolling already. Yeah. I want to add to it, but not take from it. I love that approach. And he's been awesome to work with these last few months.
Yeah. If I may, I'm going to zoom out for a second.
Yeah.
Because there was a piece that was done just within the last 24 to 48 hours about Lance Leipold being compared with Bill Snyder. And I'm a K-State guy, which everybody knows. But I wanted to get your take on this because they're different scenarios in how they came to be, but both coaches took a program that was very in a sorry state and then turned it around to do something special. And I wanted to get your opinion on that because K-State fans sit back and say, you know, Bill Snyder was my guy. Yeah. What's it like to sit back and say, Lance Leipold is my guy after having to withstand the issues of Les Miles and all the other guys that have been in and out of the program and all the different coaches and to finally have some of that consistency?
Yeah. That's a great question. And I saw the reaction on Twitter, both sides of it yesterday. And let me start.
I'm on the neutral side. Let me just say.
Here's the thing. We should celebrate them both.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and for years I always said, man, how blessed by Bill is the state of Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Snyder and self. We got the two best Bills in all of college sports, and now you got Lance Leipold. And here's the other comparison. The first ever Hawk Talk that Lance Leipold did, just with the way he answered some questions, the way we described his meticulous, detailed approach to how he structures his organization, how he attacks his day, all that. He was describing some of these things, and then the way he interacted that night, this fan came up to me and he said, you know, Brian, this is off the air. He says, this new ball coach, he just reminds me an awful lot of Bill Snyder, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. And I said, sir, I'll tell you how you should feel about that. You should be so excited because, I mean, he had the greatest turnaround maybe in the history of college football at Kansas State and made that thing a year-in, year-out juggernaut. If we have something, anything close to that where it's mentioned in the same breath, we should be over the moon. So 3 years later to see those comparisons made, Kansas fans should feel great. We should feel blessed, grateful, flattered, all of that. And I think it's difficult to compare them because the circumstances were way different. The time in which Snyder was doing the rebuild, which was probably a bigger undertaking, quite frankly. And a lot of people want to make the Kansas job into being the bigger overhaul undertaking because we had been bad for so long and historically bad. But K-State had been in a really rough spot, too. And obviously, you know, Lance needs to extrapolate these results out over the course of quite a while longer before you truly get a comparison. But I will say this, and this is not to take any shine off what Lance has done, but I think we forget that there were some pretty important faces, and we've mentioned a lot of their names in this interview already, that the previous coaching staff had recruited to Kansas or were already here playing at the time of the departure. So the cupboard wasn't as bare and empty as people try to make it out to be. The wins weren't there, and he got us the wins. Yeah. But he inherited some great pieces. What he did that was great was he came in and sold those kids on his vision and promised, you know, to deliver the type of week in, week out, you know, competitive play that they want to be a part of and eventually the winning that they dreamed of being a part of. And he got them to stay. And then he added to it. And if you look at his track record in the transfer portal, he's been hitting home runs left and right with some of these immediate impact guys. I didn't expect that to be the case. Like we said at the start of the interview, we went from a position of vulnerability where we were just trying to box out these pilfering SEC schools from taking our guys to suddenly we've got continuity on the roster and we're going out as the aggressor and taking guys. And I didn't think we'd be in that spot so quickly. So two prongs to that response, Colby. I think we need to give credit for what was already there. But we give all the credit in the world for Lance's ability to keep them, develop them, make Kobe Bryant and O.J. Burrows and Jalen Daniels and Devin Neal and some of these guys the stars that they are today with his player development and then build it upon it. I don't mean this as a critical comment to the Mangino era, but we didn't capitalize on 20 wins over the course of two seasons like we could have. And obviously, the wheels came off in 09, and Mangino was gone at the end of that season after losing seven straight and some turmoil at the end. But I think what Lance has done that's different than the Mangino era is they've been able to hit more recruiting home runs on the heels of their success, where success breeds more and more victories as well. He's done a better job of that. So how does that compare to Snyder? I still think Snyder's turnaround is the ultimate turnaround job of all time, and I think it's apples and oranges to compare at this small sample size state. But do compare them both in the brilliance of how quickly it flipped, how sustainable it was for K-State, and how sustainable it appears it could be for Kansas. Too early to say. Yeah. if we go to a bowl game this year, it'll be the first time ever we've gone to back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah.
But with a new stadium on the way, with a new contract for him and raises for his assistants, and a relationship between the AD and the coach, which is as good as I've seen it, and bring in Doug Girard as well, our chancellor, and you talk about the synergy from the top of the university through Travis Goff, through Lance Leipold, it's as good as you'll find. And I think that's partly why, you know, those were tough decisions for Lance to say no to Washington or to not be heavily involved in job races like Nebraska and Wisconsin. But you can bounce around from program to program, but when you have a relationship built on trust and we're pointed the same direction, we're oaring the boat at the same pace, same speed, all that, that you're not necessarily just going to find anywhere. You know, it's why Jim Schlossnagel just left the national runner-up Texas A&M baseball team to go to Texas because of the relationship with the AD. We've got that. I know we're on right now in Travis Goff's hometown, so let me just tell you, I'm so, so blessed to work for a guy that is the consummate professional but also the ultimate leader in the way he infuses encouragement and inspiration and confidence in every member of his staff, not just his, you know, upper cabinet, but everybody. I've never worked for a guy that was better at building up people and making them feel valued, appreciated, and motivated to go be even better than Travis Goff. He instantly restored the culture at Kansas because we were in a little bit of a fractured state, and some of that had to do with the pandemic, but he instantly brought people back together. And to have a Jayhawk sitting in that chair that understands how special our traditions are, how special the place the University of Kansas is, and he'll never take it for granted. He'll always lead with his heart and do what he thinks is best for our program and our state. Man, are we blessed to have him. So you add it all up, and you can see why I'm walking 2 inches taller today here in Vegas. I think we are living in the golden era right now of Kansas athletics. I say that all the time when we're up on stage around the state. I say, pinch yourself and soak it up, because 30 years from now, they're going to write books about when Goff, Self, and Leipold were all doing their thing together. Yeah. And by the way, since we're in Travis's hometown, his batting average on head coaching hires is 1,000.
Oh, yeah.
He's 4 for 4, and I realize I'm including Nate Lee, and he's yet to coach a game for soccer. But Dan Fitzgerald, home run hire. That's baseball, for those that don't know. Lance Leipold, obviously, grand slam, home run hire. Coach Kuhl with women's golf already has him in the tournament, home run hire. Nate Lee will be the same. So he's a great evaluator of talent. He's a great motivator of people. He's a tremendous leader. We're so lucky to have him, and I appreciate the chance to get up on the pulpit here and preach to the good people of Dodge City and Garden City and all surrounding parts of what a great, great ambassador one of your proudest sons happens to be for the University of Kansas.
Yeah, I think back to the Liberty Bowl, and you know, Kenny Logan is down in the end zone, just like can't believe the ending of the game, and the first person to go in there is Travis Goff. You know, of all people, just shows the kind of character that he has and the leader he is.
And he's not doing that because there's going to be cameras on him.
Right.
He's doing that because he cares about the person inside those pads and had the helmet there, and he's getting down eye level with him and letting him know how much he appreciates the blood, sweat, and tears that Kenny had poured into putting Kansas on that place. And how neat is it that a year later, Kenny gets to go out winning a bowl game, and now is with the Rams and so excited about his future. But to think about, you know, in trying times and moments of adversity, when your head hawk is down on his knees, you know, breathing confidence and encouragement into you, that's a great glimpse and snapshot into how special he truly is.
I want to talk about another one of Travis Goff's projects is obviously the stadium renovation.
Yeah.
And, you know, games are going to be in Kansas City this year. Just both of those things combined, just what does that do for the program?
Well, first off, and this is another credit to Travis. I mean, how many programs that get displaced for a season have to play at a junior college stadium or an NAIA school? And nothing against those venues, but we're playing at the home of the back-to-back defending Super Bowl champions. You know, our first two games were at the home of an MLS stadium that's state-of-the-art, super nice. And I was telling Jackson Snyder on KSAL earlier that I'm as excited from a broadcast perspective about those first two as the bottom four, because there's going to be a premium on those tickets. I mean, only 20,000 folks get to go. The Cauldron area, which is always the most raucous, rowdy, singing soccer fans, is going to be filled with KU students. And I think in a more intimate setting, to see big-time college football and a rematch of the bowl game with UNLV after the Lindenwood game, I think that's going to be a ton of fun. Yeah. Arrowhead's going to be great, don't get me wrong. And I know when you guys talk to Devin and Jalen today, they're looking forward to playing where Mahomes plays. I get it. But I think those first two are going to be fun, too. And so what a great job by our administration and Travis in particular in brokering those partnerships with Sporting KC and the Chiefs to be able to give our players and our fans a first-class off year. And I get it, if you're a local business owner on Mass Street, you have a hotel, a restaurant, whatever, it's a big kick in the wallet to not have that six or seven home weekends that means so much. But this was a necessary means to an end. It's going to give us one of the nicest facilities in the conference. It had to be done. Previous stadium, though, we had so many great memories there, 102 years old. And so, again, if it had to be done and this is your backup plan for a year, how lucky are we?
Right.
We're playing in these two venues. So can't wait. Super excited about the progress of the stadium. On a different episode when we have more time, we could talk about everything that's been going up over there. But just a quick 10-second response. I'm just amazed at how quickly it's coming together.
Yeah.
And obviously, we're not going to play anytime soon there. But, man, the demolition was fast. They've erected everything on the west side already in terms of the bones of the place. And you can actually visualize piece by piece everything coming together. And today's only, what, July the 10th. So super impressed with the job the crew's doing as well.
Yeah, you know, I live close to campus, and I'd be driving next to the stadium. Like, you know, it'd be 1 o'clock at night, and there'd be people out there working. So just a real, real good job of what they're doing over there.
Absolutely. Tremendous.
I just wanted to say thank you for your time.
Of course, it's been absolutely awesome
to talk to you.
Man, thrilled to come on with you both. Excited about both you guys and your ascending broadcast careers. And I'll be tuning in this fall for your own football calls. And can't wait to see that part of the state embrace two great talents like yourselves. And very, very bright futures in front of you both. So thanks for having
me. Well, I appreciate it. That was Brian Haney, ladies and gentlemen, the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, who was very gracious with his time. We appreciate you. And good luck this season.
Thanks so much, guys. Rock chop.